Regarding the decision to have a recount.
A revote.
A revote on the vice chair decision because of, in my interpretation, the confusion that's been challenged. Jonathan, please tell us the rules on challenging the chair again.
Okay, well, I'll read them. If an appeal is taken from a decision of the chair shall have the right to explain the reason for the decision. The legislature shall decide the case without debate, and the question shall be stated by the clerk. Shall the ruling of the chair be overruled? The vote shall be taken by roll call of the members present, including the chair. If the majority of members present and voting are in favor of overruling the chair, then the ruling shall be overruled. If the majority of such members do not vote in favor of overruling, then the ruling of the chair shall be sustained. So I think that's pretty clear.
So the ruling of the chair was to have a revote based on confusion. Mike Sigler?
I would like to ask Jonathan to reread that part about the seating of officers and what happens with the seating of officers.
I'm not sure what.
In Robert's Rules.
In Robert's Rules, where the seating of officers are sat.
Okay. The sentence I read from Robert's Rules says, after an election has become final, as stated in this paragraph, it is too late to reconsider the vote on the election.
So, is he done?
Frank Proto.
Be patient, Mike.
We're working through this.
Okay. The understanding that I have is that we are one step beyond, we're one step too further ahead on challenging the ruling of the chair. It's my contention that the election for vice chair was official, and a vote to reconsider that election was not appropriately made. Then came Mike's explanation as when you walked back in the room the last time and indicated that you wanted to vote again. But it's my understanding that from what you read, Jonathan, the individual that won the election for vice chair, it became official after the vote and after the acceptance, from what I understand you to read.
I'm not sure. Is there a question?
I think challenging the ruling of the chair is not appropriate. We don't need to do that because the election of the vice chair was done appropriately.
Well, I guess, in my view, Frank, the chair has ruled that there was confusion and had a revoke. You may disagree with that or think that's not correct, but I think the appropriate method is then to challenge the ruling of the chair.
Kathy?
Jonathan actually just answered my question.
Okay, we have a challenge, which is an appeal to the ruling of the chair. My reasons for having a revote were due to confusion on my part. Mike Sigler.
I understand what Frank is saying. I'm not sure that this is even a challengeable. I'm not even sure that the chair can make a challenge on this. This would be like one member of the legislature throwing out an election. I mean, we don't give the chair that power. The chair can't just say, "Well, no, I don't like the result. I'm going to throw that out." And that's basically what he's challenging. So I'm not even sure it's appropriate for the chair to challenge.
Kathy, and then Dooley, and then Pam.
Well, at one point, the county attorney asked us, or at least asked Frank, said that that's not a question. I was trying to form a question in my mind, and the question in my mind, and I thought you answered it, but Mike's comments bring up another perspective on it. The question in my mind is, what would be your opinion, or what is your opinion, of the original vote? Was it in order, in your opinion? And is there a proper way for me to ask you that, to make a ruling? Or maybe not in that order. Maybe the other way around.
Maybe we'll let other people comment, and I'll try to answer that. I think I understand what you're
asking. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm asking it right, so I might need to reformulate. Thanks.
Dooley, then Pam, then Martha.
Well, the county attorney is advisory to us, and he gives his best interpretation of rules and laws. We're not bound by them, but we rely on him. I would like to suggest that in the case of our rules that we have adopted as a legislature, they definitely are what bind us. And Robert's rules as a document is available to us when ours don't apply. And although there is a section in Robert's rules specific to elections, one can equally well say that as a county legislature, our rules are silent on elections because in our approach to things, motions to reconsider apply across the board. And we need not be bound by Robert's rules. So that I'm offering you a different interpretation. I think it's not as simple as Mike and Frank feel it is.
Pam?
Well, the challenge to the chair, is that in effect now? I mean, Frank, do you have a challenge to the chair?
I don't think so.
He's not made it yet.
I haven't officially made it yet because I don't think that it's appropriate. I think the election was appropriately held.
Martha, then Carol, then Mike Hattery.
This is supposed to be a democratic process. This kind of ruling, this kind of vote is not whether we support such and such a resolution going to our state legislators about an issue, or whether we want to spend money on a program or hire somebody this is a very fundamental decision about who we're going to be this year. And I will tell you that the Democratic Caucus had a majority of the majority of the Democratic Caucus asked me and Mike to serve together as a new kind of leadership team, and that was something that we talked about at length, and we had there was a majority of support for that. And it was in that spirit that I thought that would be worth doing, that I have the time to give to that part of a team. Mike and the majority of the caucus accepted that, and Mike's now, he said he was confused, and his most recent vote was to affirm what the caucus discussed and what he agreed at that meeting, along with others of us. I guess I would have to ask my Republican colleagues who are pushing this, is that what you really want to do? Do you want to trick this legislature into accepting a vote that, in fact, if we all just re-voted, would not be the majority choice? You know, the last vote, Mike has said he was confused when he voted the first time. And I just feel like this is too big of a decision to the technicalities should rule. I mean, I just think that's not very not going to serve the people of this community very well.
Carol?
Yeah, I was going to appeal. I think we have two really fine women who have put themselves out, and it's not easy to do as candidates. And, you know, one of whom has clearly served us with great distinction, and for whom, you know, none of us feel, you know, there's no question here that this was any result of lack of fulfillment of duties or anything like that. And it's really hard to put yourself out, and I just don't think that it's fair what we're putting the two of them through. If there's a will of this body and a way that we can move forward and have a year that works, where we work together on the things we want to accomplish, that's what we ought to be doing. And there was a lot of confusion, and I'd like to see us find whatever way it is to move forward with respect for these two fine women. Thank you.
Mike Hattery.
Who's after me?
Kathy, then Frank, then Mike Sigler.
You know, I don't think anybody on this, at least I nor any of my colleagues, are interested in pulling any tricks here. On the other hand, there are rules in the legislature. And I think unfortunately, we're on camera here. And we had a revote right before our first recess that was really clear, and we have a seated vice chair. And then there were people who were unhappy with the vote and wanted to recess and reconsider the vote on the chair. And I don't know if that has to do with Martha's discussion of what went on in the Democratic caucus, but this is a legislature. We're not the Democratic caucus, and we're supposed to be making decisions here based on a vote of the majority of the legislature. And we had such a vote, and we had a seated vice chair. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, these tapes that are rolling would confirm that. We had a vote that was confused, and then we had a clear vote. And according to the things that have been laid out to us by the county attorney, I think that's pretty clear. So if anybody's playing games here, it's not those of us who are asking for clarity on what was a very clear vote that has already been taken.
Kathy Lucifer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear with everybody around the table that I'm a Democrat who takes my responsibility as somebody who, it, just like Carol said, has put themselves out there, as every one of us around the table, when we vie for this honor and privilege, puts themselves out there. And one of the things that Dan Winch told me when he was retiring was, he said, you're one of 15. You have one vote. And I take that seriously. And I'm going to say right now that I actually may be one of the Democrats that, and this may come as a surprise to some of you, did not vote in the majority of the Democratic caucus. My vote is still valid, and I don't see myself as playing games. I see myself as someone who's trying to move forward in a democratic fashion. And furthermore, I think that I'm probably in the majority in this room in wanting to end the pain of this as soon as possible and as equitably as possible. I will say that I think that the level of discussion and the respect that we're showing one another is good, and I would like to maintain that as we go forward. So let's pull together here, take a deep breath, and try and find a way to come to a fair and honest decision as 15 legislators.
Frank, then Mike Sigler, then Martha.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I tend to agree with what Mike Hattery has described. I think in our zeal to get something done, if things don't go our way often, we say things that we may tend to regret. But I agree with Kathy's perspective, and I appreciate what Carol has said also. We are not a board of directors. We represent 15 different constituencies. Some of us overlap in different constituencies. We represent people of all parties, and some who are not registered in any party. And some of us spend a lot of time, a lot of you do, meeting with people and reaching out to get opinions. When we come around this table, and this is the part that I resent a little bit, we come around this table, we're not supposed to be viewed as members of any political party. We're supposed to be viewed as legislators. And I'm a little bit taken aback by an individual, regardless of who it is, saying that a decision was made in the Democrat caucus to do something in a certain way. That is totally inappropriate because that gives the public the impression that we're making decisions behind closed doors. And some of you who will go unnamed have raised a lot of concerns about Albany and some of the decisions that are made by three men in a room. Well, guess what? We should not be being accused of doing the same thing. And all we're doing, I think, as Mike Hattery has asked, is for clarity on the rules. And I think that trying to get this correct is what's important. And I think that we have department heads that are watching, we have constituents who are watching, and I think we have a duty to ourselves also to be honest and straightforward. With all due respect to the individuals who are under consideration here, this was not meant to embarrass anybody. And I, for one, if an apology is in order, let me be the first to apologize. That is not the purpose here. The purpose is to get it right. And I still contend that we did it right and that this latest move is incorrect.
Mike Siegler.
I just want to say, I think Mike Hattery and Frank pretty much summed up my position. I just want to mention three things. First off, I find it incredible that we could blame the GOP for this. I swear, I think if Mike Hattery was the only Republican on the legislature, you'd figure out a way to blame him for whatever goes wrong. This is not a technicality. It concerns me that in the Democratic caucus, when you talk about a leadership team, and that sounds to me like a restructuring of the charter. There's nothing written in the charter about a leadership team where there's a chair, there's a vice chair. The vice chair's duties are well spelled out. There's no talk of sharing power or anything like that. And this hits me. I'm surprised, frankly. I never had heard any talk about a power-sharing kind of arrangement that happened within a caucus. So I'm left also wondering about, we had an option to do a secret ballot. So when people talk about, well, there was a vote, there was a vote. It was very clear. And I'm left wondering if it was a secret ballot vote, wouldn't have come out the same way, or if Leslin wouldn't have garnered more support. So that's all I have to say on this.
If Martha, then Will, then Tyke.
I want to try to be, I think I misspoke or been misunderstood. There was no idea of a power sharing. If that means, I didn't mean that. It's clearly, the idea was clearly one chair. There's no question about power sharing, but just a sense of working collaboratively on a lot of initiatives, and I was looking forward to that kind of a role. And in terms of trick was also probably the wrong word. What I'm trying to say is I think, Mike voted for me the time when he said he wasn't confused. And, I guess I feel like that just as people who have to live together for another year, it seems like that, in a sense, to hold him to a vote that he says he didn't mean, feels like making a very big decision in a fog.
Will, then Tyke.
Thank you, Mike.
I'm sorry. I just need to say one thing. And a lot of what I meant to say was that I was asked, whether the Democratic Caucus, whoever it was, I've been asked by a majority of this group to do this, and I have been thinking very, very seriously about withdrawing, and I have been asked not to withdraw. So I'm really uncomfortable with all of this, but I have been asked not to withdraw at this point. That's all I'll say.
Tyke Randall.
I think we'll...
Oh, no, sorry. Wilbur Burbank is next. Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting between both Leslin and...
You'll get an elbow one way or the other.
And Martha. And I feel... what they're both going through, it is a very, very difficult thing. And what makes it especially difficult, as Carol's left to put it, is that we have two wonderful people both of whom I think could do an admirable job. I do want to ask Jonathan, though. You, on January 5th, sent us a memo, or an email, rather, on the organizational meeting, and in it you, point number two, down the bottom, you say, however, when this county adopted its charter, it eliminated all provisions concerning failure to elect a chair, and simply changed the term from 1 year to 1 year, or until a successor is elected. Could you please expand on that and tell us what you mean?
Well, I was talking about the chair position, and the question had come up. The question I was really trying to answer is, what happens if there's not a majority for the chair? And in the county law, there is specific provisions which discuss, well, what happens if at the organizational meeting you vote and no candidate gets a majority, and it explains what happens, and it basically says, if by February 1 you don't have a majority, the county clerk appoints someone. But when we did our charter, and when we first established the charter, you basically took the county law and took provisions out of that, choosing to elaborate on some and to eliminate others. We eliminated all those provisions on what happens if there's not a majority, and just changed the wording of the which said the chair shall serve for 1 year to 1 year or until a successor is elected, which, to be frank, made it more ambiguous, because in the county law it's pretty clear what you do, and when we changed that, we made it less clear.
Though one interpretation of that until a successor is elected suggests that you could, in fact, have a re-election before the course of a year.
One interpretation of that, yeah, because it is somewhat ambiguous. I don't think that's what it means, but like I say, it is a somewhat ambiguous term.
Mike?
I don't say a whole lot, I guess, and that's my fault, not anyone else's, but what's right is still right by me. I guess I'm a pretty simple person when it comes to that, and I resented very much that it sounded like it was being thrown back at Republicans, and it was being a party issue, and I resent that a lot. We're not here because of that. It wasn't about trickery on anyone's part. I think it was a clear message that, and I'll speak for myself, I can't speak for all my colleagues, the vote was clear. It was clear that we supported the candidate that, the two candidates, I guess, that represented us this past year, that did a great job. I think, you know, to point out the fact, we could have nominated one of our own Republican candidates for the vice chair position. We chose not to do that, and I think the message was clear that we have a strong trust in the team that we have in the past year, and I think we should be looking at that as what's right for the taxpayer in the county. And I think that it's a simple, you know, what was right was the vote that was taken. There was no confusion on my part, and I don't think on many of my colleagues' part. I think they were clear in who they were voting for. Let's do what's right.
Leslin and Carol.
Thank you. This vice chair thing is wow. Interesting. I actually just wanted to say one thing to my colleagues. You are probably embarrassing me more with your apologies. I don't need apologies. I'm actually fine, and I do want you all to know that. Whatever the outcome of this is, I'm fine. So please stop apologizing. I'm not that thin skin. It doesn't bother me. The one thing that I heard that concerns me, and maybe I'm reading a little bit more into it, is the conversation around we need to take this vote seriously because this is, you know, a real serious decision. There's a lot at stake, and I don't want there's any assumption that we're not taking this vote seriously, or I don't want to sit here and feel like over the last year or how many that I've served in this capacity that it's being taken for granted, or it's being characterized overtly or covertly, just my own reading on this, as
not what has been the best for the county. So I just want to set that out there, but more importantly, please stop apologizing to me. I am actually fine. I'm trying to keep my daughter quiet more than anything else. So please, thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, I just wanted to, in an attempt to move past some of this, Jonathan, there was something else you said about if we can't move forward on the, whether the challenge to the chair sits or doesn't sit, there was some other provision by which a member of the majority vote could ask for a revote. And what is that provision? And which... Well, am I on the side that could then ask for that?
It doesn't apply to elections, is with Jonathan's interpretation.
Right.
But yep. It could. It's an interpretation.
What, vote to reconsider?
Yeah. What I was talking about is the motion to reconsider, and you know, we have a rule on when a motion to reconsider, and our rule basically doesn't really say when a motion to reconsider is in order. It says when a motion to reconsider is not in order, interestingly. But my opinion is that it, and I realize it's debatable, is that it's not applicable for an election because it says in Robert's rules that once you finish an election, you can't make a motion to reconsider.
What?
And our rules also say that if our rule is silent on something, we refer to Robert's rules. And my interpretation is that as we are silent on that, we should refer to Robert's rules. I realize what Dooley is saying is, well, we were silent on that maybe because we meant to suggest that we weren't adopting any of those exceptions from Robert's rules, which is an argument, but I'm inclined to think otherwise.
And you're also, as I understand it correctly, saying that should we just proceed on the basis that this has now been a vote, we can, anybody can then ask to renominate or redo a leadership vote at any point and have to go through this all over again?
No. I wouldn't suggest that.
Martha, and then Kathy.
We often move the order of business so that to accommodate staff and audience, and I would like to suggest that we could go ahead and have our presentation about housing. I know that Patricia, Carrie, and Nancy Zaler are here to talk about state budget cuts. I don't know about if the public is interested. I think some people may be here for public privilege of the floor. And I would propose, is there a way to just like put a bookmark here and do other stuff? And then if people want to stick around to watch the rest, they can. But we can have that part of the actual real business of the people and then come back to this later. Is there a way to do that?
Well, I would say there's no motion on the floor or anything at the moment.
Frank and then Mike Sigler, I believe.
Martha, while I understand what you're proposing, and I'm sympathetic to our staff having being here, I think there's no more important piece of business in front of this legislature right now than to complete this process. And I think that any member of the gallery or whatever, or anyone that's watching us on TV that wants to tune us out certainly has the right to do that. But I think we ought to continue with this. I think some people might find this actually interesting to see how we deliberate and perhaps how we proceed. And I would apologize to staff if they need to sit through this, but we can always postpone their presentations also if we wanted to be sensitive to them and their time. But I think we ought to continue with this discussion and get this thing resolved. But thank you for making the suggestion.
And Mike Sigler, Kathy Lou Cerrera, then Pam.
Well, I just want to say that while I agree with Frank on the merits, considering I think that this election is done, I wouldn't mind moving on to other business because to me, Leslin's the vice chair, so if we wanted to move on to other business, I wouldn't have an objection to that.
Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was actually my comment. I heard Jonathan make a ruling, and it's one that I believe confirmed our election for vice chair and Leslin as the vice chair, and I believe that we should move on to the next order of business.
Pam?
Is that true, Jonathan?
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, one. Yeah, I don't make rulings. I just kind of give my interpretation. I assume what Kathy's talking about is the part I read on the elections being final.
Well, that was kind of the question I had asked before, and then Carol clarified it a little bit, and you, I think, said the way that you interpreted it. You're our county attorney, and that's good enough for me.
Okay. Well, I just. To be clear, I mean, I was just reading from, I think, I mean, obviously there are two different views on, you know, on who was elected. And I think more of the issue is, you know, like Mike Siegler said, well, as far as I'm concerned, we could move on, and one candidate is the vice chair, and someone else thinks another candidate is the vice chair. I think the real issue is, and I understand that, is, well, how do you proceed from there, right? I mean, what do you do? And I think the only real way to do that is what I was suggesting is to challenge the ruling of the chair, because I don't really know any other method of doing, you know, of moving on from here.
If I could just engage you in dialogue about that, I've been listening to what Frank has been saying about that, and it sounds to me as though his position is that to do that implicitly agrees that the initial election was not valid in some way, and many of us feel that it was.
Right, but
do not at this point have a challenge to the ruling of the chair. I'm going to call on Pam and then Jim, and then I will indeed make a ruling that will proceed with the agenda. And if we come back to this later on in the evening, that will be...
I think John was still about to say something else.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, getting to the substance, which, you know, I guess, you know, in terms of... It seems to me there was certainly confusion on the first vote. There were three votes. The first vote was confusing. It's because it seemed like there were more than 15 votes. The second vote, you know, it sounded on the face like it was 8-7. But, you know, I will say that we do have a history of, in the past, where people have said, well, I was confused about that, of revoting because someone thought they were voting one way or the other. Now, I realize people have questioned if that's really the case or not, and some people have, but it does seem to me that whether rightly or wrongly the chair has ruled, and interestingly it's his own confusion in this case, but he's ruled, and the only way to really move on, I guess, is to challenge that. And that's sort of like, you know, kind of tying in the substance with the procedure, because and I realize that some people, you know, say, well, you know, I don't see that in any way as acknowledging that the vote was legitimate or not. I just think, you know, if you believe the vote is not legitimate, then how do you challenge that? And I believe you challenge the ruling of the chair. Now, I realize the concern is that it may be the same vote as just voted on the same thing, though I don't know if that's true or not, but... I realize that one might be concerned about challenging the ruling of the chair because then he may have the same vote. But I do think that's the way to do it.
Pam?
Well, one of the things that I think is important, one of them was what Jonathan just said, is that in the past, in many instances, or in a number of instances, we've had revotes because it's been unclear. And as the process has gone on, we've had to revote. And I also think that in this particular case, that it comes down to whether the language, I think, is that if the election is finalized or final, and I'm not sure that was the case here. I because there was confusion all the way through there, and I felt as if it was not done, and And Mike was clearly confused. And so I feel as if that with the exception that we're doing this time is not allowing a vote because that's what we've done in the past. When we've had these human errors, we've allowed that to be accounted for, and we have redone them.
Jim Dennis.
Simple question. It appeared to me, and I've been paying attention fairly closely, and it appeared to me that you voted twice. Is that what... Is that the way anyone else saw it or not? And it appeared to me that Mike voted twice. It would be really interesting to see the tape. And that would, if that were true, it would kind of throw it into the situation that there should be a revote on vice chair.
Frank?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to what Pam is describing and then comment on Jim's comment. If indeed we have a history, as Pam said, for not reconsidering, but if someone is confused, I think the very first thing that our chairman did underscores that, and we gave him the opportunity by his own confusion to change his vote. Before the vote was announced, he said, we can go back and look at the tape, that I want to change my vote. And that would underscore and that would agree with what Pam has said, that we have permitted legislators to do that. The second vote came out, and Leslin was elected on that vote as vice chairman. Or chairperson. Excuse me, Leslin.
I'll take chairman.
You take chairman? Okay. The challenge, ironically, was not on the vote for vice chairman. We go back to the very first comment I made when we came back in this room almost an hour ago. The challenge that Dooley made about reconsideration...
It wasn't a challenge.
Excuse me. The request that Dooley made to reconsider her vote, she wanted to change her vote, was for chairman. We can go back and look at that on the tape. It was not for vice chairman. That's when there was discussion about going into a recess, for the very first recess. So the recess was called not to discuss the vote on... Well, it wasn't caused by the vote on vice chairman, although I'm sure that was the topic of conversation when seven or eight of you got together, although we're not supposed to use that word, right? So I think it highlights that we do permit people to change, as you've described, Pam, and Mike had that opportunity and did it. The second vote, or the second number that you recited, clearly made Leslin the vice chairman of the board. And I just wanted to say that as, I don't think Mike voted twice. I think he was able to change his vote, as Pam has described, that we have permitted others to do over the years.
Carol?
Yeah, we've been debating here, and we've heard legal opinion, but my understanding is that it is ultimately our decision as a body how to proceed. And is it out of order at this point to ask that we vote on taking it on?
On what, Carol? I can't. Carol, can you speak up a little bit?
Give me a minute. Okay, I was just looking for a way past this, and because I mean, ultimately, we need to move forward with the business of the legislature, and I guess I just don't see it as fair to either of the people running to leave this. I don't see this as fair to either of the people who are running to leave this as a decision that hasn't really been made. So I would urge us to find a way to to say there was a lot of confusion and we were going to just redo it for whatever reason we want to state.
Julie?
Yep. Am I right that you are about to make a chair's ruling on this? Is that what
I was
you
about
said?
To rule that we proceed with the meeting, give us time to reflect on this conversation, possibly by the end of the meeting. And if that is, if the conversation is over, that's how I will rule. We will proceed with the agenda and come to this juncture at the end of the meeting.
I would like to proceed with the agenda for the reasons mentioned earlier, that there are people sitting here and they shouldn't be hostage to our long-winded discussion, but I'd like to return to this topic later.
That's a direction I will take. If people would like to appeal that ruling, let me know. For now, we will proceed with our agenda, and later on in the evening, we will come back to this question at hand.
Mike, so that you're not apprehensive and you don't have argument, I won't challenge that ruling.
Thank you. Okay. We have no petitions, communications, notices, no special orders of the day.
Yes, sir.
Privilege of the floor from the public. Michael Lane has signed up to speak.
I'll come down just for a brief comment. I'll try to keep it brief, considering the long debate you folks have been having. I come to speak about the tourism money that I've read that you folks are considering, the possibility of state legislation to change how that is used. I would hope you would think long and hard about that. I'm awfully afraid that if you begin chipping away at that for this pocket or that pocket, that money will soon drain away and it will not be used for the purpose it was originally started for and raised, where it's raised from people who come into our community and stay at hotels and other places so that that money could be collected. I'm a very strong proponent of economic development. This county does not spend enough on economic development. It relies too much on funding from the IDA administration, which is going to be going down over the years. We need to put more tax money into it, but I don't think raiding the tourism development money is the way to go. The next thing, somebody will ask for public works and bridges out of there or social service programs out of there. None of those should be taken. It should be left alone. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. John Benkowski was here earlier to speak under privilege of the floor, but he could not stay, so he left his comments, some comments in writing, which we'll distribute later on. Anyone else who wish to speak under privilege of the floor? Please state your name and residence.
Good evening. My name is Paul Mazzarella. I'm Executive Director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. I'm here tonight to speak in favor of the Tompkins County Housing Affordability Fund and the Housing Trust Fund, and also the memorandum of understanding that would implement those programs. I happen to be in the business of working toward making affordable housing, and I want to speak from my heart tonight and thank Tompkins County for the leadership that they've shown over the past 5 years or more to bring affordable housing to become one of the central issues and to actually do some very positive things to help us address that problem. First, the county need assessment that was done in 2006 helped quantify the need for affordable housing, and that study showed that we need about 3,000 new housing units by 2014, more than half of which should be affordable. That really helped us in understanding the extent of our problems and started to move us forward. The next step was the development of a housing strategy for Tompkins County, which really created a framework for local governments to understand some of the things that we can do that are positive to address this problem. What you now have before you, I think, is the next logical step, which is moving past the study and the talking stage and actually creating a program where we can implement the development of new housing. And I'm very pleased that Tompkins County was the initiator of coming up with local dollars to create these funds. And I hope you're also the first of the three parties to actually formally vote to approve that money. One final thing I wanted to say is that if you've been following housing issues on a national level over the last year, you understand that in many markets, housing prices have gone down significantly, and that's not true in Tompkins County. Our prices have stabilized, but they still remain high, and housing affordability is as much of a problem today as it's ever been, maybe even more of a problem for a lot of people who are suffering from job losses or lower-paying jobs. So again, I urge you to support these programs, and I congratulate you on your leadership.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? John, state your name and where you reside.
Thank you. John Spence, Executive Director of Better Housing for Tompkins County. I just wanted to come and also talk about my support for the good work that Ed Marks and his group have done. In supporting the Affordable Housing Fund, there has been a lot of conversation between the City of Ithaca, the Town of Ithaca, Ithaca Neighborhood Housing, Better Housing, and Cornell. I think the Chamber of Commerce has been in there, and TCAD. And so I really appreciated the amount of thought, effort, conversation, and collaboration that has gone into this effort. Fully support it, and tip my hat to all of those that have worked so hard on it so far. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anyone else wish to speak on the privilege of the floor? If not, we'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators. We've all certainly had enough conversation. Frank Proto, Ben Tyke.
Two items under just general information. I think it's appropriate that we encourage our board of the Board of Elections and our two the two individuals that represent that office to start the process as soon as they possibly can on educating the public on the use of the new voting machines. We're waiting for the state, as I understand it, to certify that the machines are appropriate and acceptable. And in speaking with Steve, he explained that he's hoping, or they're hoping, he and Elizabeth are hoping that it happens early, perhaps March or April, so that this summer they can start going out to the various locations that they're looking at to help the public understand how to use these machines. The concern, of course, is not to wait until September or October when there's little or no time. As he explained it to me, there's some gizmo, and Nathan would understand this better than I, there's something that has to be done to the machines, and we need the state authorization and the approval in order to move to that next step. So he gave me a name, Nathan, and I'm sure that you could program it into your your little packet there to get an answer. But anyway, I think it's important that we stay on top of that. We need to really make sure people know how to use these new machines. The second item, if you permit me, several of us, and I've spoken to a couple of you about it, several of us have been interested in discussing the designation of newspapers. And we've done a little bit of research to find that surprisingly enough, under the state's general construction law, is where part of the part of the identification takes place. I hope to meet with Jonathan, and any of the rest of you that would like to sit in are welcome to see if there might be an opportunity to designate a second newspaper. One of the concerns that I've had, and I tried to reach Bruce Estes about it, a couple of Saturdays back, he announced that the Ithaca Journal was going to be doing certain things. One of them was advertising only from Wednesday until Saturday. I honestly do not know if that affects legal advertising or not. But it's my understanding that the newspaper cannot go, and I'll appreciate this more than the rest of you, the newspaper cannot go entirely onto the Internet in order to accomplish the legal their legal requirements. So just stay tuned. Jim and I have been talking about the possibility of at least discussing designation of a second newspaper in town.
Thanks, Frank. Tyke Randall.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, thanks, Mike. I just I wanted, first of all, to say Happy New Year to everyone, and it does, to me, it really does feel like a new year, and I just wanted to thank everyone in here. You know, it looks at times like we're at odds, but I can tell the public that this is a legislature that knows how to care. They care about each other. They care about the people they serve, and that was demonstrated throughout my whole ordeal for the last 2 years. They've blessed my family in so many ways, and I just wanted to acknowledge that and thank everyone for that. And I really would like to thank my wife and kids. I think when we got married, it was 21 years ago. I'm not sure that she was into it for a career change of being a nurse. And I think she's probably realized since that the word patient and nurse are probably not two words that should go together when they talk about me. But I've been blessed with her presence. I couldn't have done it without her. And I certainly, you know, I think it's everything went well, better than expected. And I think I owe a big step of gratitude to her for making that happen. And also, you know, Tompkins County, we pride ourselves in being innovative and out in front. I'd like to be considered, perhaps, for being the first hybridized human in the legislature. Just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back. Continued wishes for good healing. Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just want to remind people that Light in Winter is coming up. It's January 23rd to 25th. It's an incredible festival, a merger of science and the arts in very creative, interesting, illuminating ways. And you'll find the significance of the word illuminating if you go to the website, lightinwinter.com, and you can find out more about the schedule. I urge you to look at it.
Julie Kiefer, then Leslie, then Greg.
Thank you. It was Frank who inspired me to say something, but he's disappeared. I believe that we can always designate a second or a third newspaper. It's just a question of, do we want to spend that much money? But it's an interesting question of whether or not the Journal will run legal ads every day if we ask, and I think that that should be easy to get an answer to.
Thank you. Leslie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your warm and gracious acknowledgement, and certainly want to wish you well in the new year. I'm glad it's a happy new year starting out that way for you. I want to mention a couple of things. It's January, and we celebrate the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Every year, the Greater Ithaca Activities Center, commonly known as GIAC, hosts an annual community breakfast. And so I want to let you all know that it is happening on Saturday, January 17th from 9 to 11:30 at the Beverly J. Martin Community School gym. There's a fabulous keynote speaker, and you'd be, her name is Belisa Gonzalez, and the topic that she is speaking about, it's a question that says, "Are you calling me a racist? Exploring the cost of derailing conversations about race." I'm sure it proves to be a very, is titillating a word? Titillating to speak. So please join us at the breakfast. Also, we collaborate with the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission, where they hand out the awards for their annual poetry and art competition among students, as well as the Community Dispute Resolution Center that gives out its annual Peacemaker Award at that breakfast as well. So please do join the board and staff and all of the community at GF for this annual event. And if any of you feel so inclined that you'd like to volunteer, there's always a need for volunteer help to serve or cook, etc. The other thing I want to mention is on Monday, which is the day on celebration for MLK Day, there's the usual day of events, workshops at GIAC, and luncheon at Beverly J. Martin School. The community is invited. It's a day when we encourage people to put the date on doing something, some work or something to help promote and carry on the cause of civil rights in our community. It's also a day when I'm proud to say it will be the unveiling of the dual designation of State Street as also Martin Luther King Jr. Street. I was very happy to serve on the committee with a number of other residents and staff of the city to bring this to fruition. It was a project and brainchild of students at Ithaca High School Circle of Recovery class, and I know that it's been a two-year very spirited discussion, but it is happening. So that day, the events kick off at 9 a.m. with the unveiling at the corner of North Albany and West State Street of MLK Street, Junior Street, duly named with State Street in honor of Dr. King's memory and legacy. So please, you're all invited to join us for that historic event. And as we continue into January, the 20th is January, we all know, is Inauguration Day for our President-elect President Obama. It is also a Legislature Day. I will not be here because I will, with others, will be trying to bask in the spirit of community in Washington, D.C. for this absolutely momentous occasion, one that my heart still beats relatively fast every time I think about it. And so I hope that everybody who's watching or listening will tune in and watch and have really good conversations in schools and everywhere about what this all means and how far we as a people in the United States of America have come for this to happen. And certainly want to take this opportunity as a legislature to wish our president-elect at that time, President of the United States, well. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. I have Greg and then Frank for a quick comment.
I normally wouldn't have had anything to say, but Frank didn't have his consumer minute, so I thought that...
That's coming up.
I got the floor now, Frank. You're going to have to listen to my consumer minute for a second.
All right.
I just wanted to comment on a couple things that I think are maybe little problems that, if they're paid attention to, won't become big problems. But myself and some of my constituents have struggled, particularly in December, with our recycling pickup. And I think maybe the root of the problem lies more with our contracted hauler than with us ourselves. But with the responsibility of oversight, I think that the onus is on us to make sure this doesn't become a significant problem. I've discussed this quite a bit with Barbara Ekstrom, but apparently weather changes, and apparently quite slight weather changes, prompt our recycling contractor to not pick up entire roadways full of recycling. And this happens not only in my district and not only on my road, but a lot of people that I hear from. And I got my 2009 recycling guidelines in the mail, and I think I read them from front to back, side to side, and I don't see anything mentioned in there about weather. And I understand that unexpected or significant storms can cause interruptions in all kinds of things transportation related. But I think that if we use weather as an excuse for repeated numerous failures to pick up recycling around our county, it can only hurt a program that, although required, would flourish certainly better if we ran the program a little bit tighter and made sure that the pickups were made when they were supposed to be made. One of the things I've heard was that if it's missed due to weather, it's picked up on the next business day, which differs quite a bit from the next day that we're used to in a holiday situation. So If your recycling is not picked up on Friday due to a holiday, it'll be picked up Saturday, but if it's not picked up Friday because of weather or some other anomaly, it's not picked up on Saturday. Presumably, it would be picked up on Monday if you could find any evidence of it from the snowplow. The second thing is I had some experience with Continental Airlines in Ithaca, and I could tell you a half-hour long story full of all kinds of interesting little tidbits, but the biggest disturbance to me is a lack of a customer service representative for the contracted carrier for Continental Connection. That's Commute Air, and there is no customer service available for Ithaca travelers in the Newark Airport from Commute Air. And if you go to the Continental counter, they will remind you that you did not fly here on Continental. You flew here on a Continental contract carrier, and I don't work for the Continental contract carrier that flew you down here. I work for Continental. So when you purchase your ticket, even though you purchase it all from Continental, there is a lack of customer service support on the part of the contracted carrier. I think we should be worried about that, because I think that could become something that ultimately jeopardizes this carrier doing business here at our airport, and that would be a shame.
Thank you, Greg. Frank Proto, briefly?
No?
He
did the consumer bit.
Okay.
And then some.
If there are not others, we'll move on. I don't think we have a municipal official here to report. If not, then we'll move on to our presentation regarding Housing Affordability Fund and Housing Trust Fund. Thank you, Ed.
I know you all received and have all done your homework and read every page in this booklet, correct?
Yes, sir.
So we really can cancel this presentation and move on. But I won't do that. The Community Housing Affordability Program and Community Housing Trust Program, as was mentioned by Paul earlier, have really come out of many years now of work in this community to try to address the affordable housing needs of the people in Tompkins County. I won't go into too much depth here, but the housing needs assessment did highlight the fact that there was a large unmet need for housing in this community, and that the quantity of housing was an issue. That the housing, particularly affordable to middle-income and low-to-middle-income people, was not being produced, and that the demand was growing, and there was a gap. And then, as a result of that study, we worked with many in the community to develop a housing strategy that could help address that gap. And out of that discussion came four principal strategies that were recommended to address different aspects of the problem. Inclusionary zoning and incentive zoning are items that can only be undertaken by local municipalities, towns, villages, and cities in New York State. Several communities are looking into aspects of that currently. Employer assistance programs. One of our major employers, Cornell, is developing a program. We hope others may do the same. But again, that is something that lies with employers in the community as the appropriate lead and actors on that. The Community Housing Affordability Program and the Community Housing Trust are things that really have to come from the community, and that's the focus of what we're going to be proposing for the legislature to endorse at their next meeting. The first aspect of this, the Community Housing Affordability Program, is designed to really eliminate a barrier to the creation of new affordable housing. What we heard from developers, both profit and non-for-profit developers, was that the hardest part of doing an affordable housing project is the front end. To be able to develop the plan, to get the approval, with a lot of uncertainty in terms of local community zoning as to whether you will get approval, and having the upfront funds to cover the cost of doing that was a real barrier. And so this program is designed to assist projects by in those pre-development costs by making zero-interest loans that would be repaid when the project comes to fruition and they get final financing for a project. It would help both profit and not-for-profit developers potentially use this tool to get projects off the ground. The kind of uses that this funding could be put to is options on land, securing land, that's an issue. Environmental assessments, site designs, building designs, approval permits, obtaining longer-term financing. All of these things come with price tag, and those funds are in very short supply to be able to cover those kinds of expenses early in the life of a project. Community Housing Trust Program is designed to ensure that when housing is built that's affordable, that hopefully that housing remains affordable into the future. It's not just a one-time investment that goes away the first time the house turns over. And the way that this can be achieved is by separating ownership of land from ownership of the housing unit. And this is being done all over the country, whereby the home buyer buys the house under an agreement where the land cost is borne by another entity, and the housing unit is kept affordable even on resale by sharing the equity gain with the homeowner and with the housing trust that then keeps the housing unit affordable.
Can we pop in with questions? Or?
Sure.
How are property taxes handled in that situation?
The homeowner is responsible for the property taxes and all the expenses of owning the home.
Including the land.
That can be treated differently in different jurisdictions, and it's one of those things that is something that still would have to be worked out with each local jurisdiction. But the way the funding program would work, that it would help underwrite the cost of land, provided that the developer assures that the housing unit remains permanently affordable through community housing trust or some other acceptable way of achieving the same objective. So how does the county participate in this program? Well, we're proposing to use a source of funding that involves no local tax dollars. Over the years, we've been very successful through the Community Development Block Grant Program in obtaining funds for our county's home ownership program. Over many years, those program funds were loaned to homeowners and then repaid at low interest after a deferred period of time. We have received many of those payments now, and we're proposing to use a portion of those what are called program income funds from the original HUD grants to fund the county's participation in this collaborative effort that we're talking about. We have the funds. They're in hand. And we will also have, we're not using all of those funds, we will have additional funds available to continue to fund our home ownership program should we run low on funding from other grants. So this is not any county taxpayer dollars, and in fact, these are HUD funds coming from the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development that must be used for these types of programs. And so how does our money work with the rest of the program? What we've been proposing, working with the City of Ithaca and Cornell's community initiative, is that each entity would contribute annually, the county and the city putting up $100,000 each to be matched by $200,000 from Cornell University. And this would be expended over a period of 6 years, so that the county would put in a total of $600,000, the city would put in $600,000, Cornell would be putting in $1.2 million for a total of $2.4 million available over a six-year period. And how would the program be administered? It's proposed in the MOU you'll be asked to approve that a program oversight committee be established with appointees from each of the participating entities. Each would appoint three representatives to this committee that would then be responsible for basically oversight and general administration of the program. There would be a notice of funding availability. It would be a competitive grant application process locally administered and overseen by this committee.
They would appoint members to an application review committee, a smaller group of professionals qualified to make the best assessments of the applications that are submitted. The program oversight committee would make final recommendations to the participating entities, one of them being the county. They would monitor the use of the funds, facilitate agreements between the granting entity, in this case the county, and the funding recipient, and also provide agreement language for those agreements. The application review committee, it would be appointed by the program oversight committee, and they would be made up, again, of professionals, including, we hope, at least one professional from outside the county to provide perspective. And they would make recommendations on the applications that were received to the program oversight committee. The process, again, would be to publish a notice of funding availability. Applicants, profit or non-for-profit housing developers could apply to one or both of those programs that have been described. The application review committee would evaluate and rate the applications. The oversight committee would make final funding recommendations to each of the participating entities. And the county legislature would ultimately review and approve each loan or grant where county funds were involved. And so the county's commitment that's being requested is to commit the $600,000, $100,000 per year over 6 years to fund the funding of programs, participate in the program oversight committee with Cornell University and the City of Ithaca, disperse funds pursuant to action of the county legislature when projects are recommended and accepted, enter in agreements with the funding recipients and account for the funds. And it's proposed at this point that county planning department staff would provide assistance to the oversight committee so they can get up and running and do some of the logistical work and that helps help that committee be effective. And that's the quick overview. A lot more detail, the history and the programs are in the handout that you received last month. We're happy to answer any questions if you have them. If questions arise between now and the next meeting, please contact myself or Jean Lassess, who's here, if you haven't met her before. And we will try to respond to your questions and provide additional information if you need it.
Martha, then Frank, then Dooley.
The question of staffing from the planning department, it was asked in the planning committee. I just want to ask you to explain how that happened.
Right. A couple of years ago, actually, we were reviewing our programs and priorities in the planning department, recognizing housing was a huge need in the community, which needed additional resources, we thought, from the county and from the planning department, and also recognizing that we didn't have the ability to get new resources. We had to allocate their existing resources. So we worked with TCAD, and you'll remember that last year you approved, or a year and a half ago almost, approved transfer of the Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund over a period of years to TCAD, which is in a good position and better equipped to run that program. That was done with the intent that we would reallocate staff resources that were working on that program to the housing program. And that's why we're able to get to where we're at today with these recommendations and also provide that support on at least an interim basis to get this up and running.
Frank Perto?
Thanks, Mike. Ed, with all due respect, although you're doing all the talking, a lot of us know Gene really did all the work. So
you're absolutely correct.
I think Martha has made that point a couple of times, that certainly at the committee meeting, so I think Gene ought to take a bow.
But absolutely. She's done a great amount of work to get this to where we're at right now.
On the same point that Martha raised, the last bullet, is the department eligible to take an administrative fee of any sort for any of the work that they're doing?
Well, technically out of the program income that we have, we do take some administrative expenses, and we're allowed to. At this point, I see this more as part of our community effort as planning staff to work with collaborate and facilitate collaboration in the community on one of the on issues that we work on, all kinds of issues, as you know, whether it be agriculture or transportation or environmental protection. And this is the same thing with housing. Over time, this may evolve into something different where there's another organization taking that responsibility, but we felt that at this point it was important that there be someone there to provide that support, and I think we can do it within our current budget.
I mean, this will be a constant process of evaluating time.
Right.
So, I mean, if it gets to be a point where...
Absolutely. And the Program Oversight Committee, we hope as they get going, they may have their own ideas on how that should work. And if there's going to be a change that involves our staff, we would bring it back to committee at least.
Okay. Thank you.
Dooley Keeper?
With respect to the the Oversight Committee, I didn't see any expertise called for in sustainability or human service type needs. And yet I think people who have those filters would be useful on that Oversight Committee. Is there a way to add some of those skills to the list?
Well, as we know, many of the people in this community have multiple skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And we hopefully can bring as many skill sets to the table as possible when you choose who you appoint to those positions.
Right. It would just be nice if those additional things were mentioned as desirable.
Right.
It hadn't been brought up till now, but we can certainly try to accommodate that. It'll be up to the legislature and the other partners to determine how those are appointed, who's appointed.
I had a question about the financial contributions. Initially, I had thought that they would be pooled and housed in some institution, but
right.
As I read this today, and I actually did read it, it seems as though each of the participating funders will keep control of their own funds. Is that right?
That's basically correct. Many people would have preferred what you described if that were possible. The feeling was because of the sources of the funds are from different areas with different, potentially different restrictions on how they're used, it would be cleaner and perhaps more acceptable to the partners to have that final say on approving whatever grant or loan is made. Very similar to what we've done in other programs revolving loan funds and tourism grants and other things in the past. And so it just was a lot easier when you have three entities trying to agree to do something. You can get them so far, and I think we got about as far as is feasible at this point.
Okay, that was a change from what I had understood earlier.
Very early on, it was conceived differently, yes.
The problems. And another thing that struck me as I was reading it was the suggested scoring number of points for various characteristics or criteria. I don't remember which word was used. And I thought more should be given to the nodal development portion and less to the household characteristics portion. And I have a proposal, but I'll come and talk to you about that. Is there a chance of...
At this point, it will be up to the program. The way it's written, it would be up to the Program Oversight Committee to take that draft and finalize it. We don't propose to do anything more with that at this point until let the Program Oversight Committee, that's going to be responsible, do the tweaking at this point.
But they don't exist right now.
No, they don't.
So it would be possible to change
the
draft and say this range for this range for that.
The problem with any changes at this point is it's taking us a year to get the city and Cornell to agree to what we've got, quite honestly. And additional changes could mean many more months of delay, I'm afraid.
Or not.
Okay. Ms. Lucerera.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy and impressed with this. Those of y'all that have longer memories will remember that I had some concerns about moving economic development revolving loan to TCAD. That's done. This I like, and there's a number of reasons why. One is we all know people who work in Tompkins County but travel a long way, and not just with rising gas prices, but before then it was a hardship. And the solution is workforce housing, affordable housing, lots of different solutions, and I'm just really pleased at the collaborative efforts that you've made. I tend to agree with your last comment that the long time that it takes to pull these groups together and the talent that y'all have is something not to be taken lightly by last-minute changes. I would like to ask, though, do you have any expertise in election mediation?
Not,
I just wanted to
make
people blush.
None at all.
Thanks for your efforts. It's a great job, y'all.
Thank you.
If there's no further questions, thank you, Ed. Thank you, Jean. Oh, Carol?
I don't have a question for Ed.
Leslie?
This is for Jonathan. Is he?
I can't see. Is he still down?
I'm here. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Many of you know that I am related to that incredibly well-spoken gentleman who spoke first under privilege of the floor. Good-looking, too.
Mike Lane spoke first.
And I am quite supportive of affordable housing. I'm also quite supportive of this project, in particular because it is a public-private partnership approach and a joint Cornell City-County effort. I would like to, I've spoken to Jonathan about this. We're not voting tonight, so I don't necessarily have to have the determination tonight, but it is coming to PDEQ before this body meets again, and on, you know, on which I, it's not coming to PDEQ
no,
this time?
We voted in December.
Yeah, it's
December,
coming.
We voted.
Budget has to look at
budget
it.
Now. Yeah, budget. Okay. Well, I guess I'd like a determination from Jonathan when it does come back to this body as to the permissibility of my voting on this.
Given that she already voted on planning, but
well, my opinion is that it's fine anyway. So, you know, if we get to a particular contract, which would go to her husband's organization, then we can talk about that. But just voting on the program, I don't think there's any issue at all.
Pleasant being clairvoyant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I will pass. Carol, Dooley, and Kathy express my sentiments.
Okay.
Thank you all for the work on this. Affordable housing is extremely important to me as someone who is experienced the joy of being able to get an affordable house and provide housing for my family. So thanks for doing it.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you all.
Under my report, just briefly, we had a question come up from some legislators regarding keeping track of our hours. New York State may be requiring this in the future, but it is not being requiring this this month. The earliest it would ever come into place is early February, and we'll have plenty of notice about how to do that if that eventuality happens. And finally, we all got a copy of vacancy board notices for 2009. So if you can think of constituents from your jurisdictions that would be interested in serving in those capacities, please encourage them to apply through the proper channels. I have no other business to report. I have no report appointments, so let's move on to report from the County Administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thank you. Given the hour, you'll be happy to know that I don't have a report tonight. You'll be less happy by my request to meet for a few minutes after this session, if we can, in executive session, to talk about some personnel issues, especially the labor negotiations that are upcoming. So I would appreciate just a few minutes after this meeting in executive to talk about some parameters for those negotiations.
Thank you, Joe.
Any confirmation that we're less happy?
Thank you, Joe. On to Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
No report. No.
No ruling.
No executive session. No nothing.
And Finance Director David Squires.
Just a brief item of good news. You might have seen the press release about our financing recently. We issued $11.1 million of bond anticipation notes. And to be frank about it, to issue any kind of municipal financing right now is very difficult. It's surprising whether people actually will bid on your notes. We were very fortunate. We got a rate of 1.14%, which in fact is the second lowest rate in the last 12 months. The only lower rate a couple of months earlier in December was 1.09. But frankly, my estimate was about 2%. And in terms of, and the reason why we got a good rate is right now, they're being very selective in purchasing these notes. And the benchmark is AA or better. And we are in the high end of AA. To even bid, we got three bids. One, the savings between the high and low bid was $300,000 of interest cost. If it had come in when I thought about like 1.92%, it would have cost us $70,000 more. If it had come in what I think is what the negotiated rate would be, around 3%, it would be another $250,000. So our strong credit rating is now being demonstrated in the financial markets. We have another financing that we separated out because it was uncertain that the market would have the appetite to buy more than $11 million at one point. And we need to finance the improvements for the health department building. So that sale is scheduled at the end of the month. And I think that we might be fortunate that there'll be a, just before the sale, there will be another Federal Reserve meeting. And if they lower the federal funds rate again, that could be advantageous for a rate. But also, we separated out because this, the next issue, banks would be eligible to bid on it because of a tax code issue, it being new money versus these were renewal notes. And the more people who are interested, the better off we'll be. Because right now, you have one party, New York. We're fortunate in the fact that there are investment banking institutions in New York State that specialize in buying New York paper. But there are also investment banks that are bidding on New York securities at really high rates. And if you're stuck with having to secure financing without competition, you're going to be paying a lot more. So I couldn't be more delighted about this result. And hopefully we'll have a similar result at the end of the month.
Thank you, David. If there's no questions, are there any reports from other county staff who wish to be recognized? Some who are here? Maybe we'll stoop to comment. Oh, Mike, did you have your hand up regarding David's report?
Well, I just wanted to ask David quickly, like, how much lower can they go? I mean, how much are they going to do than 1%? Are they going to pay us?
That's speculation. Okay, then we'll move on. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Oh, Nancy wishes to speak. Sure.
Very briefly, Martha asked that I would just share with you very briefly the part of the governor's proposed budget that affects our department and the county. I know Joe has been doing a good job of getting input from all the departments, and we'll be shortly sharing with you the overall comprehensive view. And I have put a more detailed explanation in writing to Health and Human Service Committee members and others now tonight. But briefly, the portion, one of the significant recommendations the governor has made is to create a youth programs block grant, taking all of the funding from the State Office of Children and Family Services that flows through our department and to local governments for the purpose of providing youth development and delinquency prevention programs. All those funds collapsed, combined with the state funding that goes to our Department of Social Services to partially reimburse them for the cost of putting young people in secure or non-secure detention. Those two funds together at the state level were $118 million. Now at the state level are $90 million, which is a 25% reduction. That in and of itself is significant. It is more problematic for several reasons, and it's more detailed in your written material, but what you need to understand about why that's a problem and why Patricia Carey as the SS Commissioner, Joe Mariana as County Administrator, and I all agree that this is a change that should be made. The funding for detention is a completely volatile, unpredictable amount of money. We cannot predict in a given year how many young people will, as juveniles, commit an act that require them to be placed in either secure or non-secure detention while they are awaiting their family court proceedings. It could be one, it could be 15, it could be for 5 days, it could be for 6 months. At the rate of $400 a day, $350 to $500 depending, it is extraordinarily volatile and expensive, and the county is mandated to pay for it. Couple that with programs that provide youth development and delinquency prevention, and the county would be asked to figure out how much of a fixed amount, at least 25% less than we've had in the past, how to cover a mandated cost and an optional cost that prevents young people from going into detention. And it could easily force the elimination of many of the youth programs that have been part of our social safety net and have diverted young people from foster care and probation and other institutions. The other part of the proposal that is troubling is that the governor is actually proposing repealing sections of the state law that have for 60 years provided per capita reimbursements to every single town, village, and the city of Ithaca, as well as to the county, for the purpose of funding prevention programs. With that law repealed and the mandate to provide detention out of the same funding pool, you see the inherent tension between those two purposes. We are asking for and urging the governor to reconsider separating out detention funding from youth development. And there's lots of consequences. There are specific changes we're recommending, but Martha thought it would be useful to address the whole board about this because the implications are many. The other part of the provision, which is also completely untenable, is that he has repealed the allocation level for our youth programs for calendar year 09, which was included in the last state budget, and said that whatever amount the county chooses to give for youth programs out of the new block grant, which is 25% less, would become effective January 1 last week. But we have no idea what amount the county would be eligible for, nor do we have a process in place for figuring out how to divvy that up. And it would be retroactive. And the inherent unfairness of that it leaves us in question. We have given some direction to the youth programs that we had approved or in our approved budget that they should, for the moment, continue to provide service with the full knowledge that as we know more about how the budget unfolds, we may need to make some adjustments in budgets or services. But we feel we have enough funds to continue at the moment and allow the budget process to proceed. We're starting with the governor and hoping that he would amend within his period of time, his own budget, to make some separation of the detention funding and to reconsider the January 1st deadline. If those two things were done, then we'd have an allocation and we expect cuts and we have all the mechanisms we need to respond to rational planning. And what we're looking for is the hope for time to be able to do that differently. So that's the short version. More details in your programs, the memo that I handed out, and that includes some of the potential impacts. So just wanted to give you an heads up.
Thank you, Nancy. Martha, briefly, and then Carol.
I really appreciate your coming, and Patricia also, especially waiting so long to talk. Both of you were hesitant to, you know, sort of come here, and I really urge you to, because I think we need to hear this as it's unfolding and not kind of at the end of the story. I mean, if we're going to go to NYSEC, a lot of us are going to NYSEC in a month, and this is the kind of thing that it's really hard to digest. And so really appreciate that this time is, I don't think there's anything more important to, you know, before us this year than these issues. So When you said, let me ask you, so the whole basket of funds that you're talking about that goes to your department is how much? One point something? How
many? That's our total department budget. No, 300 some.
So the state money that you're talking about that's going to be put in the block grant is 300?
Yeah, you have to.
I'm looking for an order of magnitude.
Yeah, I'm happy to provide all the numbers, but it's around $350,000.
Okay, and then I know this is also tough with the variability, but the detention money tends to be how much? Is that the mandated
cost? About $600,000.
$600,000?
Yes.
A year?
That's a projection for 2009 that the SS. That's the total cost. The local share has in the past been 50% of that.
So
300,000 of state aid for detention, 364,000 for youth development.
So since that's the detention money, it has to be the first paid because it's a mandated program.
Well, it is a mandated program. How you figure it out? I mean, Joe, you want to weigh in?
Here's the way. Here's, I think, the shorthand way of looking at this, and tell me if I've gone wrong here. You have $300,000 currently in youth money. You have another $300,000 in state money for youth detention. So that's $600,000. The first action is a 20% cut in that allocation. 25% cut. So that comes right off the top. So we're left with a smaller amount of money. So programs could be affected because of that. But then comes the volatility issue. And again, if one more young person is in detention over the course of a year, that's $150,000 worth of impact that we're talking about. So that money is competing with other youth programs in this block grant. So it's very possible that, again, if there's one additional kid in detention, that means significant impacts on all other areas of youth services. That's what concerns us.
But it's also, it sounds like the detention money like immediately replaces all the.
Well,
no, I think I think it's going to be an additive thing. So the block grant will be sized by basically what's being provided now plus for youth services plus detention. That'll be the basis. That'll be the first step in determining the size of the block grant. Then subtract 25% from that. That will then determine what we will be given, give or take, if I understand the process correctly. But then again, it's based on kind of current conditions. And if because of social change or whatever, there's additional pressure on the detention side that takes away money from everything else we do in your services.
And just
that's
to,
what we're trying to compete with.
So
and then it's retroactive.
The obvious, those preventive services are the things that keep kids from ending up in detention in the first place. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Carol, briefly.
Now, I was just going to ask if there's anything that we can do that, you know, is there a resolution that you'd like to bring that would probably go through Health and Human Services?
I'm happy to email to you the sample letter that I have shared with the agencies themselves, with the members of our advisory board that is urging the governor to separate out these issues and to change the implementation date and several things. So I haven't come prepared tonight with a resolution. Individual letters are still being received, as far as I understand, to be considered by the governor, and those are appreciated.
And the time frame for the decision, if we were to want to weigh in as a body on this, as we have on some other?
I think as all proposals, it's going to be mixed into the entire state budget process. The state budget started a month earlier, and are weighing in. We could do it comprehensively with other programs. I think Joe has a draft letter into our state reps.
But the period of time where the governor can revise his own budget submission.
I've heard a couple different ones. I mean, we believe it's the end of next week. I had thought it was this week. So I'm. Joe, do you know for sure?
It's 30 days, I think, after release of the budget.
He can make
changes.
So working days
that?
Or?
Released on the 16th.
Okay. Was it?
Next Friday, then.
Yeah. So.
Thank you, Nancy.
Yep.
Any other comments? We move on to, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Seeing none. Move on to the consent agenda. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial. They can pass in a single vote. We have two appointments to the Youth Services Board, Peter Daniel Barrow, to the Environmental Management Council, Roger Segelkin. And our resolutions, we just have two on consent, from the Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution A is funding for community celebrations grants, and Resolution B, funding for tourism marketing and advertising grants. Who would like to move the consent agenda? Tyke moves it. Pam seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. We're going to take just a moment. I guess Nathan's out of the room, so we'll move on to Public Safety Committee. Greg Stevenson, Chair.
I'll defer to Vice Chair Dennis, who ran the last meeting.
Thank you very much, Greg. We had a meeting prior to the last legislature meeting, did a couple of boilerplate resolutions for the sheriff and probation, I believe. And the only other announcement, the first meeting of the committee to study public defender / assigned counsel ABIR group will be held January 13th, I believe.
Okay.
And I can't bring up the time right now, but 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Thank you very much, and that concludes the public safety report.
Thank you, Jim. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
WDAC did meet on December 17th, and I think probably we talked about our spending plan for 2009, recognizing that there's a lot of work to be done and appreciating the appropriation from the legislature so that we can move forward. And you'll get some more information on that. One of the biggest things that we really talked about is civil service and starting to look at plans we can put in place to help address the civil service issue, not just from a civil service test prep angle, but also from a review angle of your test, a real decent review, to getting copies of a practice test for applicants who might want to have an opportunity to practice in some of them. And so that was pretty much the bulk of our discussion. We will meet again on January 28th is our next meeting.
Thank you. If there's no questions, we'll move on to Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, there are several items that came up in the last 3 weeks. I'm canceling the meeting that was to take place tomorrow, and the items that we will need to deal with can be brought forward on the 20th. We'll probably schedule a very brief session just before this legislative meeting to address those.
Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
F&I will meet January 15th. And I think at that meeting, as I see in the room, one of the things that we will be looking at are the bids for construction of the Brung Road project, because I think the bids are in. So just so you know, that is our meeting.
Thank you. Human Resources Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. We did not have a meeting this month because it would have been scheduled on January 1st, and I assumed everyone was busy, and so we will pick that up again in February. I have a note from Paula wanting to remind you, and I obviously want to remind you of the special orientation session on performance review process for the direct reports, and that is January 29 at 5:30 p.m. 10 people have said they will be there, 4 have not. Please contact Doreen if you have not, and figure out what you want to do about that. So, and one person has been excused to go to the dinner of the Chamber of Commerce, which is a good idea. Joe will have some things later with personnel, and that concludes my report.
Thank you, Jim. Government Operations Committee, Mike Hattery, Chair.
Government Operations, next meeting is Friday, January 9th.
I have one resolution regarding our meeting dates for 2009, Resolution C in your packet. I'll introduce that.
So you're moving that? Is there a second? Greg Stevenson seconds. Is there discussion? Julie Kiefer.
I would move to cancel the August 4th meeting. We seem not to need four meetings in the two main summer months. I won't try to change the dates since people seem to feel it's too complicated for the public to have changed dates, so I just move to cancel one meeting.
Is there a second to that amendment? Leslie McLean Claiborne seconds. Discussion? Mike Sigler.
I actually don't think we should do that, Julie, because I need you to catch up to me when it comes to Mrs. meetings. I'm sorry, but
I don't miss the summer meetings.
Just kidding.
Carol Chuck.
Yeah. When this came up last year, I actually didn't think that we needed to do it because it seemed that the business of the legislature could continue and there would be enough of us here. But now that we have been, that it is pointed out in the Ithaca Journal, for those of us who do have to balance this with other jobs and other schedules, it means that there's really, and now, for example, the last week of January, which might have been a week that you could have an extended week without other meetings, we seem to schedule things in those extra weeks as well, that maybe we should be considering Dooley's thought that there ought to be a week that we know that we get vacations like everybody else.
Thank you, Carol. Martha, then Greg.
The trouble is people schedule their vacations all different times, and I've had I can't remember this past year, but you know, the only time the family can go away is say the second August, over the second August meeting. So if there's no first one, then I've missed. So then there's a whole month that goes by, and
amend it to the second one.
The point is, there's no one time when everybody goes away. I don't think it's. I don't really think it helps, and I think this year we just might have plenty to do.
We're debating our amendment to our meeting dates. Greg Stevenson, then Kathy Lucerer.
I think it's too difficult to pick one day out of our entire annual meeting calendar to pick as the time when legislators get vacation. I think Martha just pointed out we're all over the place as far as our own schedules, our own vacation. I'll publicly disclose that I missed the last meeting. We can go in the journal ahead of time. I'm down one already. I think we can deal with it as necessary as the year progresses. I don't think it's appropriate to take one meeting out of our schedule right now.
Kathy Lucerer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would tend to agree with the sentiments expressed by Greg and Martha with this addition. None of this is indispensable, and the business of government does grind on.
We're about to vote on an amendment to Resolution C to eliminate August 4th. Are you prepared to vote? All in favor?
Oh, boy.
All in favor of eliminating August 4th from our schedule, please raise your hand. One, two, three. Opposed to the amendment. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11.
Is this allowed in the room? Excuse Dooley from coming.
I think it failed 3-2.
Did you vote?
I had my left hand up.
Did you vote, Mike?
I did vote. Yeah. According to Kathy Covert, it failed 3-12.
Twice.
So we're back to the main motion, which is the full schedule without that date deleted. Are we prepared to vote? All in favor of the original resolution out of committee? Are there any opposed? One opposed. That passes with just one opposed. Thank you, Michael. We'll move on to Martha Robertson. Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee.
The committee hasn't met since this legislature last met, but we have three things left over from, several things left over from the previous meeting, and these off consent. We will meet Thursday at 3 o'clock, and a topic of interest for folks might be resolution about IDA civic facility legislation, and especially discussion of the room tax proposal for money to go to economic development, and that's scheduled for 3:40 on Thursday. That's the PDQ's first discussion of that proposal.
Thank you. Resolutions?
Resolution C.
D.
Right. Funding of new tourism initiative grants.
Is there a second? Less than seconds. Is there discussion? Are you ready to vote? I'm sorry, Dooley Keeper.
Remind me where the wine center will be located.
I think the proposal is under the
parking
the Cuba Street garage next across from the Holiday Inn, the first floor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All in favor of Resolution D as moved?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? One, two. That passes with two opposed.
And E, funding for festival outreach. So moved.
Seconded by Leslin. Is there any discussion? Frank Proto.
Yes, I'd like to move to separate the $20,000 into two parts. $10,000, as the description outlines, broad-based core assistance, and the second part, targeted technical assistance. So we can vote separately on each $10,000 part.
Okay, the move is to separate. Is there a second? Mike Sigler? So we'll vote on this resolution E in two parts.
Could you say that again? I didn't hear you, Frank.
Frank, can you restate your intention?
Oh, the $20,000, the total is $20,000. If, as described on the second page of the description dated November 16th, there's a $10,000 piece for broad-based core assistance, and there's another $10,000 piece called targeted technical assistance. And I'm moving to separate the $20,000 into two $10,000 pieces.
And that's been seconded by Mike Sigler. It's the amendment on the floor. Is there discussion? Kathy and then Carol?
Reading the memo, it appears to me that the broad-based core assistance is for a how-to manual, three workshops, and assistance in negotiating bulk services products contract, where the targeted technical assistance involves specific consultative assistance to groups seeking to undertake events and festivals. I don't have a problem separating it, but I wouldn't mind just a little more information on each of these, because I suspect there's more to the story that would help me in my decisions.
Carol.
Yeah, I was going to ask, groups come with thought-out proposals that get vetted, and do we know whether this organization wants to deliver the program if they receive only half of the funding that they've requested, as anybody asked?
I don't think we know that. Martha?
Yeah, I don't know that, but I think it may not be possible without it, but the this was discussed a month or so ago, and I'm a little foggy, but I think the both of these things have really been requested by, I mean, there are tons of festivals around the county done by volunteers, essentially, and so much of the time they are like newbies coming on, and they need some help to, so they're not just reinventing the wheel over and over and over again, and this would truly make all of that volunteer effort much more effective, because you'd have this manual and you'd have somebody you could go to with questions. I think both are really essential. This is in response to requests over and over again. I mean, Jackie Kiplin has said she gets the phone calls. You know, how do I do this? Who do I talk to about permits? What do we need? And that's really not her job.
Motion on the floor is to separate. We're about to vote. I have Kathy, and then Carol, and then Pam.
I guess I read a little more about it and then remembered, and just want to say that the conclusion sentence of that particular part I was reading from talks about goal setting, assisting at least 10 organizations, and tracking referrals and assistance, provide at least 200 hours of specialized assistance. this is golden for my way of thinking. This amount of money, what it'll generate with that goal, it's a no-brainer. I don't have a problem with the separating, but for now, I'm going to vote to keep them together. I like the summary, and it's been explained to me, so just thought I'd explain myself.
We're deliberating on separation, not on the top, on the overall intent. Carol, Pam, then Leslyn.
Yeah, it's coming back to me, the discussion about this, that one of the primary motivations for the group that came to us wanting to do this is that they get lots of requests for this kind of information that they don't feel they can provide now, and that they in particular get requests from those out in the various towns with organizations that are not necessarily large enough to reinvent the wheel each time, and so they want to be able to provide technical assistance to groups that are not large enough to be able to reinvent the wheel each time, and in particular to the organizations and municipalities when they want to put on events.
The amendment is on the move to separate. Yes. Any else? I have Pam, Julie, then Jim.
Well, one reason I would hesitate to separate this, maybe it's worth just tabling this and having somebody come and talk to us more, but I would hesitate to say this is a pilot project. They're just setting this out, trying this out, and it's basically has come from the fact that there's an increasing demand for increasing numbers of festivals, and this is would be a way for us to make more successful festivals and increase the tourism level in the county. So I don't think that it would be a wise thing to separate this at this point, particularly if we're seriously considering separating these, then I think we should table it because I think we should have a more detailed discussion on why they need both $20,000 to do this. But I think I'm going to vote against splitting it at this point if we are going to proceed with the vote, because I think that it just doesn't make sense. It's a pilot project.
Julie, then Martha, and I'd like to proceed to the motion, the amendment.
Pam expressed my reasoning for being hesitant about separating, but I wanted to ask the mover of the separation motion which of the $10,000 parts is objectionable.
The part that provides salary to the individual.
Who should do it for free?
That's a rhetorical question. We move on to Martha.
I don't mind separating it as long as we pass the vote. So, I made this sort of a strategic question. And I'm not clairvoyant, so I wouldn't mind voting to separate, but I really hope at least 8 of us say yes to both parts.
Okay, I'm calling for a vote to separate. Anyone else need to discuss before we vote? Mike Sigler, quickly.
I might as well speak against the whole thing now as opposed to later.
No, let's actually not say that.
I can wait.
Okay, on the motion to separate, all in favor of separating the two parts? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Keep your hands up, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Does not add up.
I voted. Can I change my vote? I voted to the first part of the resolution.
Separate?
Yeah, separate.
So it fails 8-7.
So it's 8-7, right?
I'm sorry, what were we voting?
Separation.
Separation.
I think it was 7-8.
7-8, it fails. We're now voting on the main motion, which is not separated at this moment. Resolution E as presented out of committee. Are we ready to vote on that, or do we need to comment on that? Mike Sigler.
I'll just be quick. I don't know. It seems like we have a lot of people who do this already. So
I mean, it's like, if you want to, I look at the, like the Lansing Harbor Festival. You had a bunch of people who said, hey, we should have a harbor festival. They got together, they planned it out, they didn't seek any assistance, and they got it done. And now, then they came to me and said, you know, does the county do stuff like that? And that's kind of like my job, is to inform them of grants and opportunities and to refer them to the right people. And my other concern about the whole thing is there are two concerns. There's something to be said about something being built organically. Like, if you were to talk to the people in Lane Winter, for example, at the very beginning, and they'll say, yeah, we probably needed some help, I would think, but there's something to be said about that core group who started something from nothing. And the challenges taught them how to run a successful festival. My other concern would be, you know, if you do something like this, everything kind of becomes the same, you know? You go to one festival, it'll be the same as the other festival. So really, what's the point of going to one festival when you can just wait and go to the next one? That's how I like it. So,
it's kind of
you. You are my guy.
Are we ready to vote on resolution?
Kind of becomes the same.
Thank you, Mike. Are you ready? Are we ready to vote on
no.
resolution E? Someone have their hand up? Greg, and then Jim.
Well, I just wanted to say I agree a little bit with what Mike said, and I'm not inherently opposed to this, but absent getting some more information, or as Pam suggested, tabling it and talking about it a little bit more, I'm not incredibly comfortable supporting this.
Okay. Jim Dennis, then Kathy. You'll pass. Kathy Lucerer.
I just want to tell you why I'm supporting this. Tourism is really important. A lot of these groups do need support. It's amazing the terrific mistakes you can make that cost a lot of money and that undermine volunteer efforts that have gone on for months and months. These are well-intentioned folks. They just need a template. This is a good effort. I'll support it.
All in favor of Resolution E as it was moved at Martha?
I just want to say, you know, I think we've talked more about this than we talked about the $20 million capital project for the emergency communication system when we finally voted on that. Just want y'all to know. Just minutes per dollar.
Leslie?
I think I wouldn't, after Martha said that, I have nothing to say.
All right.
Except I hope that people will support this resolution. I really hope folks will. No, I actually will say something. We just voted on the grant initiatives and all of the grant stuff, and it's one of the things that we trust our Strategic Tourism Planning Board to bring to us, and we go ahead. We may have questions every now and again. This is one of the things that our Tourism Planning Board is once again saying, we see the need, and we're asking you to support this, and I hope that we will, in like manner, respect the work that they have done in bringing this to our attention and support it.
Thank you. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution E as it was proposed in committee? And those opposed? 2, 3, 4. 5. That passes 10-5. Thank you, Martha.
Okay, now for the real fun, Resolution F.
Resolution F. We could take a break. It's been about 2 hours since our last break, or we could proceed. This is the last resolution, and then we have a resolution of the earlier topic.
Keep going.
Tompkins County Legislature position on Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency, IDA membership, accepting the recommendation of the IDA. I so move and would like to speak after this.
Is there a second? Right. Mike had 3 seconds. Go ahead, Martha.
Okay, thank you. The IDA, you should have in your packet, yeah, November 6th memo from Mariette Geldenheis and Jonathan Wood about membership of the IDA. We discussed this in December at PDQ, and then we discussed it twice. I think we discussed it in November and then voted on a resolution in December. I originally presented 2 resolutions, one that offered the status quo, which is 4 county legislators on the IDA, and this one, and just kind of said, here, you got 2 different flavors. The committee supported this resolution at the time. So that's the background, and I won't really talk on the substance of it unless...
Mr. Chairman.
At this point.
Sure. Frank?
Martha, can you describe what the 2 options are?
The status quo is that there are 4 county legislators out of 7 members of the IDA, and one TCAD board member, and two at-large members, one currently held by a municipal official and another currently held by a business person. Can I summarize the issue here? I mean,
yes, go ahead.
Okay. According to the Public Authority Accountability Act, it is not considered best practice for an IDA to have a majority of its members to be from the body that created the IDA. So the governance committee, the IDA, talked about it for a long time and came back to the IDA with a recommendation, made a number of changes in membership, like term limits and that kind of stuff, kind of thing. But sort of the controversial part is what are the slots that people would fill? The proposal initially was three legislators and no other elected officials. Through discussion and amendment, the IDA ended up voting for three legislators, one elected official from a municipality and one elected official from a school board. So that is currently in the IDA bylaws. However, the legislature is not bound by those bylaws with respect to membership. Other things, the IDA does have a right to govern, but membership, that's the legislature's choice. I felt it was important, since it's a pretty controversial issue, that before the chair appoints any individuals, specific people, to the IDA, and then we do this on a calendar year basis, that January is typically the new appointments, that we resolve this and have the full body weigh in on the preference on membership. And that was, you know, sort of, I of course voted one way at the board, but I just wanted to present the two different resolutions to committee. And so that's where we are. And if I've missed anything, Mike was part of that committee.
Mike Hattery, then Kathy Lou Cervera.
Yeah, I was on the governance committee, and I think these are positive changes. And I mean, I know it's late, so I'm not going to belabor exactly why, but I think, and it was shaped quite a bit. It wasn't the recommendation of the committee, but it was shaped quite a bit by the IDA in terms of the final recommendation for membership. So I think I'm supportive. I think it's a good change.
Thank you, Kathy, and then Dooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on the IDA for a while now. As a matter of fact, I think except for Mike Lane, I might be the person in the room with the most experience serving on the IDA right now. Sorry about that, Mike. But I also served on the governance committee. This is an interesting issue because on its face, as a reform issue, everybody wants to jump on it. But if you look at it, it's about representation. The IDA gives out tax abatements. This affects our tax rate. County legislators have a responsibility to help as much as possible address keeping costs under control. We also have the authority to do bonding for projects. It's my belief that just as we weighed in for the county's best interests in things like when we were being mandated by the state, which was a much stronger than a suggestion of a best practice, which this is, and we stood up and said, this isn't right for us. This isn't the best thing for the citizens of Tompkins County. Accepting this best practice is, I think, premature, and I think it would not be in the best interest of the taxpayers of Tompkins County. We're represented, all of us, for whatever our district concerns are, I think take seriously representation and try to represent the needs of the county. That may not be true of other people, and it certainly isn't in the case of school district officials, who often their boundaries aren't contiguous. Well, none of them actually have boundaries that are completely contiguous to Tompkins County. Some of them are outside, some of them only, a portion of them is inside anyway. And in terms of a municipal official, no one but Tompkins County legislators are elected and serve the entire county. So I believe we should keep the status quo. I believe that the state may come forward with some stronger suggestions at some point, and they may, as they often do, figure out that it's a well-intentioned but something that could have bad consequences for the taxpayers, as I believe.
Thanks, Kathy. Dooley, then Mike Hattery again.
I think that one size doesn't fit all applies in this case. the Public Authorities Accountability Act is necessary for recognizing IDAs that have had checkered histories. Our IDA has not had the problems that some of the bigger authorities have had, and I don't think that we should feel the least bit guilty about continuing to have a majority of county legislators on it for the reasons Kathy said. We have a countywide perspective. The school district wouldn't, a single municipal official wouldn't. So if the IDA is really keen on having someone from a school board or another municipality, they can do that by suggesting at-large members to us, and we will consider it. But I certainly don't want to change the makeup of the IDA board now.
Mike Hattery.
I'll try to be brief. I think there's two important things in this change in composition. One, there's still a majority of members of the IDA that have a concern for protecting tax liability of citizens in the county. Even though it's not four county legislators, there's still a majority of elected officials that have a concern for protecting real property tax base in the county. Secondly, the motivations for changing this weren't simply this change in state regulations. I think there was also a concern for bringing a more diverse group of skills and interests on the IDA.
Frank, and then Carol.
Thanks, Mike. I think it's important to support this change, or this proposed change, for particularly because of the opportunity to, as Mike has already said, get a couple of other sets of eyes on this. But we all, from time to time, are harangued, if I can put it that strongly, by constituents who think we do school taxes. And the school tax is often the most onerous of any of the taxes that we have to deal with. I think it would be appropriate to seat a school board member on the IDA simply because I think that if they're going to approve an abatement, they should take some of the heat for that abatement. And I think that the public ought to be treated to what that translates into when the rest of the burden for the period of time that it's granted has to be picked up by everyone else. The only concern I have is with these two proposed seats, the other municipal seat and the school seat. I don't know how it will be done. Will the difference? There are six school districts in the county. Will we put all six name districts in a hat and pick out the district at the beginning of the year? And can someone describe how those two seats might be filled? I mean, they'll probably be filled by the municipal official in which they're coming from. But how will we decide? How will it be decided as to what district and what municipality will be chosen?
Martha can quickly answer that, and we'll go to Carol. I'd like to go to a vote.
It's a chair's appointment that comes through the planning committee, or the committee that the IDA reports to, comes to the planning committee and comes to the legislature. So it's a full, the chair identifies people, and then we get to vote to approve or suggest others, et cetera. So that's how it's done. So it would be up to the chair to set to, and whether it solicit as much opinion from the rest of us as I suppose as the chair wants, but to have an idea of who would be good candidates and which school districts, et cetera, whatever the criteria are.
There's no established methodology at this point.
Let me just take my. I just want to say if what you're suggesting, Frank, is I just brought this here in this form. If it seems more appropriate to take out that elected municipal member, leave in the school board member. I mean, that's an option. This could be changed right here on the floor.
No, I'm not proposing that at all.
Carol,
but I think, does that say ejected or elected official?
Carol Chuck.
I had a question about
the best practices? Did the best practice recommendation from the state change since we've set up our IDA?
Yes.
And if so, do we know for what reason or on what basis that the recommendation from the state that a best practice is to have a majority of elected officials on the IDA has changed to now say that, according to the state's best practices recommendation here, the majority could be business interests at this point?
This is outlined in the memo already. Jonathan, can you summarize briefly?
Very briefly, the whole idea is that of a majority not being from the legislature is the notion that the IDA should be an independent body, and that if it's more than a majority controlled by another body like the legislature, then it's not truly independent.
Ready to vote. This is on Resolution F, as moved by committee. All in favor of supporting the change, which is Resolution F, please raise your hands and keep them high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That fails. 5 in favor, 10 opposed. Thank you, Martha, for your report. We don't have minutes from the previous meeting.
I have a...
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Budget and capital, you're out of the room.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nathan.
All right. Wanted to report that the authorization to enter an agreement with the City of Ithaca and Cornell to develop and administer the Housing Authority Program and Housing Trust Program, that resolution, we're going to be talking about it and voting on it in our next meeting budget. Talking about it again and voting on it at the next meeting. We're also going to go over, start discussion about 2009 committee goals. Of course, we don't know what the composition of the committee will be after January, but we'll at least start that discussion for whoever may be part of it. And also, we're going to be voting on our contingent fund request for the volunteer tax assistance program. That's been going to be about $10,000. We had a really good discussion last meeting and got a lot of information. I did not attach it to this agenda. I neglected over break to write in the resolution. I am sorry about that. I will send it by separate cover. I'll send it by email. I'll have Norma send it by email probably tomorrow, and it'll be in your boxes tomorrow as well. So I'm sorry for that. And with that, that's all. The next budget meeting is on January 12th, 3:30.
Thank you very much. Since we have no minutes from previous meeting, I'll return to the previous topic.
Can we get a break?
Sure. Yeah. 5-minute break?
Yeah.
All in favor of a break for 5 minutes, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Are you trying to say something before the break?
All in favor of a break for 5 minutes, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And opposed to a break.
Opposed to a break.
I changed my vote.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that is it possible that we could do our executive session before we go off back onto our favorite topic? I mean, is that possible?
We would have to go off camera and back on camera into open session.
Oh. Okay,
now. So we'll return in 5 minutes. I'm going to make a ruling on what occurred earlier this evening. I anticipate, given the controversy, that it may be appealed, so I'll just read the rules on appeal first. If an appeal is taken from the decision of the chair shall have the right to explain the reason for the decision, which I'll do in a minute. The legislature shall decide the cause without debate. The question shall be stated by the clerk. Shall the ruling of the chair be overruled? The vote shall be taken by roll call of members present, including the chair. If the majority of the members present and voting are in favor of overruling the chair, then the ruling shall be overruled. If the majority of such members do not vote in favor of overruling, then the ruling of the chair shall be sustained. I bear full responsibility for the confusion earlier this evening. I'm sorry for the lengthened deliberation that it caused. The confusion stemmed from my receiving information earlier in the day that turned out to be mistaken. I did not realize that information until the very moment that I called for a vote. I should have called for a recess before that first vote. but only realize that full impact too late. Thus, I am obliged to rule that the vote taken after the recess is the final and valid vote. So I was confused until I got more information during the recess. That's my ruling, and I made my decision based on clarifying that information during the recess. And that is my ruling, that is the final and valid vote.
What was the final vote you're talking about?
After the recess, Martha Robertson was chosen as vice chair by 8 votes. That is my ruling.
I'm hesitant to challenge the ruling of the chair because I don't think that we're at that point. And therefore, I'm going to abstain from voting. And I will seek counsel at the state level. And I would advise each of you to do the same.
Kathy?
I tend to agree with Frank. This is a complex situation, and it's not one that should be resolved in this way. I think there's been some interesting turnabouts and machinations that have taken place, and I think that we should work through this rather than utilize parliamentary procedures to make a decision for us. I don't agree with the ruling of the chair, but I don't agree that challenging it is the right way to go because, as Frank pointed out, I understand that Jonathan's issued his opinion and everything, but I think that the original vote was and I'll clarify, I don't necessarily mean that first vote. It's clear there was confusion. We've all experienced confusion in voting before, but it's also true that I don't like the outcome, and I'll be open about that.
Mr. Chairman, one other comment. If no one else, I don't want to monopolize your discussion.
I believe if Jonathan is correct, if someone wants to challenge the ruling of the chair, they have to do it this evening.
I'd like an opportunity to come back to you.
Yeah, I would rule yes. It doesn't specifically say that, but I'd rather advise you.
Frank?
I would move also that any tapes and notes of this proceeding be sequestered so that they can be reviewed at the appropriate time and by any body that some of us choose to seek counsel from. I certainly apologize to both individuals who are seeking this office, but in my opinion, we have already chosen a vice chairman and that your ruling is inappropriate. But I'm not going to move to rule it out of order until we seek other counsel.
Mike Siegler.
I don't know if Karen can do this off the top of her head, but I don't remember when we came back from recess, I think you challenged the vote. You're saying we didn't? Because Luzin won, then we went into recess.
Came straight.
What did we re-vote on?
I declared that due to confusion after recess, we would re-vote the entire initial vote on vice chair.
Right, and our contention is that was basically an illegal vote.
I understand, and now I'm making a ruling on that, and it can be challenged. Mark.
So if I understand correctly, you've now ruled that effectively the result of the election, of my election to vice chair, is the ruling.
Correct.
Is the decision of this body.
Correct.
And failing any challenge or ruling to the contrary, that's the decision of the body.
Correct.
Correct?
Is there a motion to adjourn?
To executive session.
I move. Pam moves to adjourn to executive session for purposes of personnel and
negotiations.
Duly seconds. All in favor?
Okay.
Any opposed? We're now in executive session after the cameras are
all right.
Taken down.
Have fun, Sammy.